This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We begin hour number three, VSiN by the Books. I'm Dave Ross here in downtown Las Vegas at Circus Sports. Our closer, Jensen Lewis, back home in Cleveland, Ohio. Jensen, a great hour. Of course, this hour, this final hour of the show today, Ricardo Lamas joins us a little bit later on to talk UFC 317. But real pleasure right now to be joined by CJ Nikowski. He does a great job with the Atlanta Braves and their TV network there. You can give him a follow on X at CJ Nikowski. Of course, former big leaguer. CJ, thanks for joining Jensen and I here on this Tuesday. As a Metropolitan fan, I wonder, is the panic starting to sit in that the Mets just can't beat the Braves, it feels like, yet again?
I think the panic is setting in, and it probably should. You know, it's been such an up-and-down season here in Atlanta, and I will tell you, you know, calling the games when it gets late, it feels like everything has gone wrong, right? Going into yesterday, they were 10-19 in one-run games. Why do I say that? Because you have a feeling when you cover a team like, oh, here we go again. This could be another tough one-run game that they end up being on the wrong side of. But there's something about playing the Mets right now where you don't feel that way when you're watching it, which doesn't make sense because it's a really good team. But yes, I think with the way the Mets are playing right now, it's a weird kind of comfort level for the Braves. They still have three more games in this series and still have the rest of the season series. They've only played four games so far. But I think right now, the way the Mets are playing, there is this kind of feeling that they're just going to come a little bit short if they're not getting blown out. They got some serious pitching issues that they're trying to get through. I think they surprised everybody with how good their pitching was at the beginning of the season. Count me as one of those people. I thought the pitching, especially on the starting side, was going to be a problem. And they've done a really good job answering that. And they've had one of the best staffs in the league. They still have the best starting pitching ERA in baseball, which is pretty surprising to see. But some guys are starting to come back to earth a little bit. They are getting Frankie Montas back tonight, but he wasn't very good in his minor league rehab. You're seeing guys really struggle in the clutch. Saw Juan Soto sitting 145 with runners in scoring position going into that game last night. So I think there are some legitimate reasons to at least be concerned. I also got to believe this team's going to make some kind of improvements come deadline time. But as you well know, the panic in Queens, it doesn't take much to get this fan base worried, and they are very worried right now.
Yeah, CJ, no question. Mets right now plus $1.30 to win the National League East. Philly's the betting favorite now at minus $1.45. I told Dave earlier in the show, and I think you would agree, for Atlanta in particular, get yourself to 500 and above 500, and then you can really start making some hay. Also helps when your stars are playing like stars, and may not be a hotter man on the planet outside of Cal Raleigh than what Ronald Acuña Jr. has put up here the last couple of weeks. The slug, another big-time bomb yesterday. What has stuck out about you? And Dave kind of threw it out yesterday, and I'm interested in your thoughts too. 35-1 win MVP in the National League. Not saying that Shohei Ohtani is going to get leapfrogged here, but if Atlanta continues to win and you get past the All-Star break and now all of a sudden they're right back in the thought process here, what sticks out to you mostly about Ronald's comeback and where Atlanta is here in the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, I'm not sure if you can bet MVP's the place and show, but I think I'd probably like that chance and those odds maybe for Ronald Acuña Jr. You know, so when I took this job last year, one of the things I said was I was so excited to see Ronald play every day, to see Spencer Strider make a start every 5 days. I didn't get either one of those things last year. Strider goes down after two starts. Acuña goes down after about six or so weeks, and he's out for the year. But even that time leading up to the injury that he had last year, he didn't look himself. He was behind the fastball. He looked like he was struggling, of course, in 23. It was an MVP season, and the Players Awards had him as the best player in the game. I think he came back with a vengeance this year, quite honestly. He basically missed an entire calendar year, and from jump, the first pitch he sees, he hits a homer. He did it again the other night or a couple nights ago against the Mets. It's instant power. It's instant action at the very top of the order. It was two pitches into the game yesterday, he'd gotten a base hit and stole a base. I mean, he is a completely different guy in the sense that he looks even better than he was in 23, which I know sounds hyperbolic, but he's even said it. He said, I feel better than I felt a couple of years ago. And right now the results are behind it. The swing looks really good. He doesn't take too many ugly swings, quite honestly. The chase has been pretty good. Outside of one at-bat that he had yesterday, which was interesting against Edwin Diaz because he'd already had a base hit and a homer, and Mets fans were giving him a hard time out in the outfield. He was pushing back a little bit. So I'm looking up at the crowd, doing some things here and there. And all of a sudden, the emotion came into it. And all of a sudden, we then see him chasing some pitches outside of the strike zone. But everything else looks great. He has been a little tentative on the stolen bases. I mentioned he had another one last night. I believe it's now three. Obviously, we saw a much bigger year a couple of years ago when it came to the stolen bases. But he's doing everything right. He's feeling healthy. His arm is unbelievable. There's really nothing that he hasn't done well when it comes to the ability to hit for power, for average, to run, to throw, to field, all of it. He's been excellent, and this has been probably the best version of Ronald Acuña Jr.
And talking with CJ Nikowski, former big leaguer, now with the Atlanta Braves, doing a great job breaking down the Braves nightly here as an analyst. And it's always great to pick Jensen's brain from a pitching perspective here. You mentioned Spencer Strider on the bump today, $1.50 betting favorite here for the Braves against Montas and the Mets. Is Spencer closer to being back to being fully Spencer Strider again, CJ? Are you seeing those signs again?
These last two, yes. The first couple, there were some concerns, and Jensen and I think it makes us laugh a little bit. There's a concern that the starter's only sitting at 95 miles an hour, but that was a real concern for the Braves. I'm like, you can pitch at 95. Of course you can pitch averaging 95 miles an hour, but the bumps have come these last couple of starts for him now, where the velocity has been up. He's also talked about wanting to get more velocity on his slider. Basically, everything was down about 2 miles an hour. But he is starting to come out of that right now. And I had wondered if he stayed at 95, would we then see maybe some different variation of his fastball? Would he try to throw a cutter? He's not really built to throw a sinker, right? He's not a great pronator. He's more of a supinator. That's why he doesn't have necessarily that fading change or a fastball that runs away from lefties into righties. But he's looked excellent. Every start has gotten better. The big thing for him is seeing those velocity numbers start to tick up, and Montas on the other side has really struggled in his rehab. So it'll be interesting to see. But I do think he's moving in the right direction right now for sure, and I think the expectation with every start builds to be better and better.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly, and I think the National League going to be a very intriguing race as we get into not only the second half, but what moves are made here at the trade deadline. Speaking of, let's hop over to the junior circuit in the American League. I know I've talked with you about it. You and Ryan Spielborgs do a great job every day on Loud Out's Sirius XM Channel 89, and I know that I've told Dave and thought that the American League could be as wide open as it's been the last five, maybe in the last 10 years. From what we've seen the last couple of weeks, CJ, the Rays and Blue Jays have really closed the gap in the American League East. The Astros now quietly ahead in the American League West over Seattle by a comfortable margin. Detroit running away with the American League Central. Handicap for us, in your mind, potentially your favorites in the American League, and maybe some value, maybe some teams that have started to trend in the right direction that people might want to get behind here as we get into the second half.
Yeah, I think Tampa's an easy one, and they're always a team that's pretty easy to kind of overlook as well with the Rays. I kind of did. I looked back. I was like, oh, my gosh, they've actually caught up here a little bit, and they're doing it a lot of different ways. It's funny to see them be a little bit more traditional with their starting pitching when they're the team that kind of put it on the map of being the most creative. And I think you do that when you don't have necessarily the pieces to be traditional. But here they are with their starters, the way that they have thrown, the way they're using their bullpen feels like almost any other kind of standard team. But they got their team together right now, playing some really good baseball at a time when the Yankees have all kinds of question marks and trying to figure out exactly what they're going to do. So there is no juggernaut, even though the Tigers have that really big lead in the Central. Sure, they're going to be heavy favorites, and I think we all believe they're going to hang on and win the American League Central. But come playoff time, come postseason time, I don't think we're going to have necessarily a juggernaut, which is going to make the deadline really fun because there's going to be a lot of teams in. We've been critical of teams that don't make the big moves when they're in it, like the Orioles over the last couple of years, not willing to take the big plunge because there's going to be high competition for a very limited number of impact players as we get closer to the deadline. So the Astros need to be on a starter. The Tigers need to be in on a starter. The Yankees got some work to do in figuring out a couple of positions, I think, and whether or not they got the right guys going forward. But the Rays, I think, are an easy choice as far as a team. Obviously, they've already kind of emerged here recently. And I think the Mariners should be better. I know that they've gotten off to a great start. They're three games over. They're looking up at the Astros. The Astros are kind of a surprise first-place team for me. I think Joe Espada deserves a lot of credit for what they've gotten done there. I didn't see this coming. I think everyone thought, or at least a lot of folks thought, the Rangers would be the team putting that starting rotation together. Bullpen has been kind of a little more hit or miss. And they're a team probably, knowing Chris Young and how aggressive he is, that probably has a charge in them right now. But they're, you know, they're three games under 500. So they got some work to do. All these teams that are borderline, and I'll put the Braves in this conversation as well, it's their obligation, the players, to make sure they're playing well enough into the deadline that they put some pressure on their front office to get something done. And I think that's a team like the Rangers absolutely will have to put some pressure on Chris Young. He'll gladly oblige and make a big move. He's not afraid, but you got to be close enough to be able to make it happen.
You know, Jensen and I heap a lot of praise on Alex Anthopoulos, and I think it's well-directed because I think he's earned that here. And then you get the Chris Sale injury, the unfortunate timing there. And you mentioned the trade deadline here. Do you think the Braves now, and I know it's still a long shot, what, 25-1 to still win this division, still 10.5 games right now back of the Phillies. Do you think they bring in reinforcements now with the Sale injury? What's the mentality of the Braves' second half push as we get close to the halfway point?
Well, Alex was very clear about the fact that they will not be sellers. And that was prior to the Chris Sale injury. I don't think that has changed anything at all as far as kind of the mantra here and how they look at the deadline. The question is, how deep would they potentially go? I think knowing Alex Anthopoulos and the way that he's acquired players, the idea of rentals maybe is not as attractive compared to controllable players, controllable pitchers in particular. Controllable relievers, probably the biggest one. He said about a week or so ago on local radio that he almost wants to make a trade just so he can signify to everybody that they're not sellers. They wanted to make maybe a small one sooner than later. And they were in. They were very honest about the fact that they did check in on Rafael Devers when that conversation started a few weeks ago. So they were one of those teams that certainly were interested in a big-time player. And so, yeah, I do think that we'll see. Whether it's not its ads or significant ads, they're going to lean on that side. I just don't see them necessarily subtracting unless this team just completely goes in the tank. And also part of that for the Braves is that they don't necessarily have the big pieces and guys that are going to be free agents next year. There's a couple of big names. Raisel Iglesias is a free agent at the end of the year. He's had his struggles, but has looked a lot better over his last five. Looks like he's finding his old self. And then Marcelo Zuna, which you would say yes to.
Got to wrap it up. CJ Nikowski, appreciate your time as always.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross, Jensen Lewis. Really enjoyed that conversation with CJ Nikowski in the last segment. Ricardo Llamas, the bully, is going to join us to break down a division he used to run a lot of game in, coming up here for UFC 317. But, you know, I was saying it in during the break, and I'll say it here on the show, really enjoy those conversations, like with you and guys like CJ that know the game in and out, cover it on a daily basis. And to get that insight from CJ on the Braves, and again, I'm not saying run to the window on Atlanta, because I think the Chris Sale injury is really hard for them to overcome. But what he mentioned at the end there with Alex Anthopoulos is something you and I have talked a lot about, Jensen, that if you're really handicapping some future wagers in the second half, that's where you have to start, don't you? With which teams like the Braves want to put out those signals that, hey, man, we are not sellers. Like, this is not what we're going to do. Sometimes it's hard to read those tea leaves, but I think they're making it pretty obvious down there in the ATL, right?
Not only that, and I mentioned Houston and Dana Brown, who did the same thing last year and said, not only are we not selling, we're buying. And I think he said it maybe like a month, even 6 weeks before the deadline, when, you know, people were kind of looking at Houston saying, all right, is it finally over, you know, for this group? And much to the opposite there is sending the message clear as day to not only his organization, but to the market at large, was open for business, guys. And if you got stuff you want to sell, we're ready to buy. And I think ultimately when we get to that back half of July, if Atlanta continues on this trajectory, I think Alex Anthopoulos very much in the market for a lot of ways to bolster that ball club.
Yeah, and let's say it's a big week, obviously, with this series right now in Queens. And then you've got the Phillies on the horizon there. So a good start for the Braves this week, going 1-0, now 4-0 against the Mets here in the early part of the season. Let's get to some college football. And it's interesting now because we're going to be turning the page here to July. Before you know it, it's August, and the season is upon us. Some of the, I don't want to say super long odds, these are still short, you know, single digits for the majority here, of teams that potentially could make the college football playoff. And Jensen, obviously the usual suspects are going to be, you're going to be laying a lot of numbers here. Like, remember last year, Oregon and Ohio State to make it, ridiculous numbers at the beginning of the year just to make the college football playoff. You're going to get a lot of that with, again, the big boys this year. For these kind of, I don't want to say second tier because I don't want to denigrate their programs, but maybe they don't jump off the page at you as potential college football playoff fodder. Tennessee, SM, really good year, SMU, year number one in the ACC last year. Gators, 4-1. Utes at 4-1. Any in these first page here, if you're watching in the VSiN Watch app, that might intrigue you at single-digit prices here to make the college football playoff?
Yeah, Florida at 4-1. I talked to DJ Lagway, you know, and about getting the quarterback right first and what the dynamic can be. Florida, a resurgence last year, and again, you know, thinking about where the transfer portal will be a huge part of a lot of these teams that are trying to get into the tournament. We know how tough the SEC schedule is, but Florida, you know, world's largest outdoor tailgate party against Georgia, always a great neutral site game, regardless of the records. They do get Tennessee at home this year. And so I think it's a bit undervalued there. And 4-1, I mean, you look at, you know, some of those other teams, and I know BYU will have money to spend from their collective, but yeah, right away, I would say Florida. I would think that Auburn, and again, I know I'm sticking a little more SEC here, but Auburn at plus 425, and then I think Kurt Cignetti with Indiana and the Hoosiers. I know Wes Reynolds jumping from the rooftops when I'm saying this, but 5-1 in Indiana. I mean, crazier things have happened here in the Big Ten. You know, can they run it back and be as formidable this year? Mm. They get Michigan at home. You get Penn State at home. It's going to be about validating what they did last year. Can they do that early and win some of the big home games against some of the blue bloods? You do that, you assert yourself, and boy, having a 5-1 in pocket just to make the tournament, be a nice little payoff if you have that.
Could you imagine year of our Lord 2025, Indiana goes back-to-back in the college football playoff? I mean, who would have had that in their bingo card a couple years ago? I know I would not have. By the way, there are 9 teams, Jensen, that you have to lay money to make the college football playoff. Obviously, as we mentioned, the big boys, Ohio State, you got to lay 5-1. You got to lay 500. You got to lay 350 with Texas. You got to lay 3-1 with Penn State. Oregon, same price point there. Georgia, 250. Bama, 2-1. Notre Dame, -$1.90. And then Clemson would be rounding at that 9 group team here at -$1.75. Out of those 9 that you have to lay numbers on to make the college football playoff, which one would you have the most trepidation about making the college football playoff?
Oh, boy.
I know where I go.
Yeah, that.
I go Notre Dame. Tim Murray, if you're listening, don't turn off your radio if you're listening in the car. Like, I worry that Notre Dame is going to take a step back from a year ago. Great season a year ago, college football playoff. I don't know that I want to lay almost 2-1 on Notre Dame to make the college football playoff.
Okay. I guess I would have to go into the SEC. I would have to say, you know, Bama gives me either Bama or Georgia, right? I think either one of those. I just don't see. I don't see how Ohio State doesn't qualify.
Right.
Texas the same way. Yeah, maybe Penn State. Maybe. But Drew Aller, I think, is going to be one of those reliable guys in the same way that Arch Manning will. Yeah, I'll go just because of the gauntlet, man. I'll just say because of the gauntlet. Either Georgia or Alabama probably give me a little bit of trepidation. I'm not as worried about Notre Dame. I think that they feel that they've got to get up for basically 2 games all year. You do that, you take care of business, and I think they'll be okay.
So they've rigged the system. That's what they've done, right? Because it's not the SEC. They're not in a conference. They don't have to run the gauntlet that we're talking about. So when you have it, you're like, man, we get up for these 2. I mean, they lost to Northern Illinois at home and made the college football playoff, Jensen. If that's not rigging a system, I don't know what is. And by the way, I'm not mad at you, Notre Dame. Like, good for you. You figured out the loophole. You figured this out. This is why we're not in a conference. We've got a big TV deal. So we just get up for those 2 games that you alluded to, Jensen, and we're in, baby. We're Notre Dame. These other schools that we're talking about at over 3-1 to make the college football playoff, they don't have that luxury. They got to run, maybe not run the gamut, but like, how many losses can you afford to have? If you're Bama. If you're Texas, I think in the SEC, you could say what, Jensen? They could lose two, and they're still more than likely in because that's how tough and respected and the moniker it just means more. That gets them over the finish line back into the college football playoff.
Yeah. God, this is what I'm fascinated to see just about early conference play. And, you know, we talk all the time about like, okay, you can get over early losses, right?
Yeah.
You know, as long as you finish, the resume feels a lot better. Late losses, especially in conference, how does that derail it? And now that we know, hey, regardless of conference champion, you know, the rankings are going to be the rankings. So anxious to see how that differential now is going to play in, especially with where and how losses are quantified early versus late.
Yeah, it's again, I get it. It's a new system. Year two, we've got some adjustments to it that's going to factor into some of these handicaps as well. But bigger picture here, do you like this, that we're really trying to expand this? And again, expansion is always a dicey conversation, right? Because then you get to a watered-down product. We're all going to watch. We're all going to bet it. That's not what we're talking about here. But with this, with the changes to the system, does that truly give some of these underbelly teams that we're referencing here at 3-1 or larger more opportunity to make the final dance here and have their say to win a national championship?
Yeah, I think so. I'm trying to think about here on where you get into some of these power conferences and teams that are not favorites that are kind of underneath. Like looking at, you know, I know we talked about the Hurricanes the other day, and,
right,
and how do they run it back now without Cam Ward? LSU with Nussmeier is still +$1.25, yet their schedule is what it is. Ole Miss, can Lane Kiffin run it back now without Jackson Dart there? Mm. Just certain teams and pedigrees in those middle parts, if you will, odds-wise, that might be able to allow the dust to clear in front of them. Do they slingshot past if they take care of business early and then have those big wins late?
Tennessee at 3-1 is an interesting number, that is for sure. We're going to be talking a lot more college football, certainly the NFL. Early bird special is out right now, $175. You're going to have full VSiN Pro access. We're in June, people. If you sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe for $175, you get access all the way through the Super Bowl in February of 2026. No better time than the present to hop in right now. So again, that betting guide's coming out next week. That's July 1st. Jensen and I have already done some work on that as well. So you get our thoughts there. Daily best bets, exclusive betting splits from Circa, DraftKings, full access each and every day to the VSiN Watch app, deep analytics, and betting tools. They're all there for you. Early bird special for $175. Okay, America, UFC 317 is coming up this weekend right here in Las Vegas. A man that knows one of the headliners here in the main event better than most, the Bully, Ricardo Lamas, joins us next from Chicago right here on VSiN by the Books.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We continue VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross here in Las Vegas. We've got Jensen Lewis, our closer, back in Cleveland. And now, Jensen, we're going to go to the second city to catch up with our guy, the Bully, Ricardo Lamas, one of the baddest men on the planet at 145 pounds, and knows the headliner, Charles Oliveira against Ilya Topuria, very, very well. Joins us in the Progressive Guest Line and now running a gym back in Chicago, UFC gym. Ricardo, what is this like for you, very quickly before we break down these fights, now that you are teaching the young and teaching them MMA at a UFC gym? How is your patience level with novices like me if they walk into your gym?
I definitely get tested for sure. It's funny because, you know, I kind of take advantage of the fact that I know all these movements so well, and then like I expect somebody else to get it as easy as I did. So you kind of have to take a step back and break things down step by step for everybody. Becoming a father definitely helped with the patience part. So they kind of go hand in hand.
Yeah, Jensen, you know all about that, I'm sure, with pitching from your profession, right? Of not expecting the same things that you were able to do in a diamond, like Ricardo in an octagon.
Ricardo, you can probably relate. When I would throw batting practice for the fantasy campers, and we're talking guys, you know, in their 50s and 60s, and I woke up the next day, you know, my shoulder and my elbow feel like they're on the other side of the bed and I got to go pick them up. So I know from a physicality standpoint, you can probably relate. Hey, speaking of physicality, top of this card, right? The lightweight title, the flyweight title. I'll give you the floor here. You know, Dave and I talked about Topuria. I'm being just kind of mindful of like, hey, this number to have him as a heavy favorite, you know, tread lightly here because Oliveira has some opportunities to be able to pull the upset here. Stylistically, what do you like about Oliveira there that could really give Topuria a lot of trouble there in the octagon?
Well, what I like about this matchup is, you know, I think one of the questions that people are going to have a lot is how Ilya is going to do on the ground against kind of a jiu-jitsu ace. We've seen him topple good jiu-jitsu players before. He fought Ryan Hall. He avoided the takedowns. And when he did land his takedown, he stayed out of trouble and finished with ground and pound. Ryan Hall is a different style fighter than Charles Oliveira. Charles Oliveira is much more well-rounded. He has great stand-up now. So now we're going to see a very good test when it comes to Ilya Topuria and how he's going to handle a very well-rounded fighter who has an incredible ground game. So I'm actually really excited for this matchup. I think it's going to be a great one. I think that Charles, you know, he has good takedowns, and if he can implement them and get the fights where he wants it to be, he could put Topuria in some trouble.
All right, we're burying the lead here, boys, because Ricardo, you were the last guy to beat DuBronx back in the day at 145 pounds. Not only did you beat him, you submitted him back in that day. And I know back then, right, different fighter.
Sorry, I have something on my shoulder.
There you go, dust that thing off. And I know it's a different weight class at 145, obviously, and now he's fighting up north at 155. What was it that you were able to break in Charles Oliveira? And do you see a different Charles these days, certainly at a championship level in lightweight, than you saw back in bantamweight?
Yes, I do. I do see two different Charles Oliveiras. I think back in the past, he had a bit of trouble with the mental game, and when things weren't going his way, he would kind of mentally break in a fight. I think when he made the switch to go up to lightweight, we saw a change in that, because I've seen him get into troubles now at lightweight where, you know, he gets rocked by a punch and he keeps his composure now and he fights back. Before, if something like that would happen, you would see him just kind of mentally give up. I think that, I don't know if it was the change going up to lightweight, maybe he matured as a person, as a fighter, but now he can battle through adversity and still come out on top.
Ricardo, as you get prepared for these kind of title fights, what do you look for throughout this week, you know, as guys kind of get to weigh-ins here at the end? And then, you know, for people that are looking for an edge, is there something that you always kind of look for throughout the week that stands out to you, and particularly as it not only applies to Topuria, Oliveira, but also in Pantoja and Kai Kara France as well?
Yeah, you know, definitely just listening to their interviews and seeing how confident they really seem. You can kind of tell when somebody's putting on a front or when they're really confident going into the fight. Looking at the weight cut. So also in those interviews, just kind of assessing their, you know, body language and their facial expressions. If they're like really down, sucked down, that's going to affect them in the fight. So if it's a hard weight cut, that definitely puts them at a disadvantage. So looking at little things like that will help kind of the betting fan win on fight night.
You know, Ricardo, and you talk about this weight change, okay, and going up from 45 to 55 as Charles has done. Topuria is doing that too. So vacating your old division there at bantamweight, giving up that belt to move up for this title bout against Oliveira, and again, massive favorite here, over $4 betting favorite. What do you think that does? Because Ilya was kind of the bigger guy at 45. And now he's going to go up, and Charles has filled into this weight into his body at 55. Is there a danger there for people backing Topuria? That we've seen him fight at this weight class before. He knocked out Jai Herbert, but he did struggle a little bit early in that fight back in the day against Herbert, a bigger guy, before he got him out of there later. Is there a danger that Topuria in this new division, that maybe a little bit step up in class, going right to a title shot against a guy like DuBronx?
Yeah, you know, that's definitely the question when somebody moves up. And it's not like Topuria is this really big guy, although he says that the cut to 145 was extremely hard. And I think he walks around in, you know, 180s, 190s, something like that.
Ooh.
But he's not super tall. He's going to be losing on height. He's going to be losing on reach going into this fight. But his boxing technique is so good, I think he's going to find a way around that. We've seen him go up against guys with longer reach, and he's done very well against them. And I don't think that it's going to be that big of a problem going up to lightweight here. You know, according to him, featherweight was just too big of a cut. So I think he's going to be more powerful now that he doesn't have to take those extra pounds off.
Ricardo, of this main card in these matchups, you know, Dave and I talked early this week also about when some of the round props come out, maybe looking at, you know, some finishes here, and we could have some violence, you know, pretty early in some of these fights. If there's a matchup or two that you could pick out, be like, hey, be ready early because this one could end quickly. Any of these main card bouts that you would circle and say, be ready kind of from minute number one.
I think the main event is one for sure. Topuria is going to come out swinging. We know that. Charles Oliveira is always game for a good fight. I also think the fight between Dariush and Moicano.
Yes.
Those guys are two guys that like to scrap too, and they like to come head to head. You know, especially Moicano loves to push the pace and the pressure. So I think that's another one that could end in a quick finish.
And again, that we don't have the round props yet on all of these fights, but the main event is out at 1.5. So you guys, your headspace is right on that. That's a don't blink fight here with Topuria early on. If you had to be in Ilya's corner, since you beat Charles Oliveira before at 45, what was your game plan going in then? And would you give advice to Topuria on ways to beat Oliveira since you know how to do it?
You know, the game plan was kind of get to where I felt comfortable. I thought that if I was on top of Oliveira, you know, my ground and pound was going to shine through it during the fight. Obviously, being aware of his best submissions that he had, you know, he's got a great kind of anaconda guillotine variation that he loves to hit on people, and keeping him off your back, you know, because if he has your back, he's got those long legs, he's going to body triangle you, he's going to be working for that rear naked choke, and it's really hard to get him off. So I just think staying out of a couple of situations where Charles Oliveira is really good, keeping it on the feet for Topuria because he's got very heavy hands, I think those are going to be his best chances of winning the fight.
All right, what are you walking around these days, Bully? Because I know you're not cutting down to 45. can we, Jensen, should we play the guess game of where, what does Ricardo Lamas weigh today?
I mean, I don't know. I'm on the cut myself.
Yeah. I haven't stepped on the scale. I might want to try. I think the scale is somewhere like out there. I'll look after the interview, but I'm still floating around in cutting distance from my old weight class. So if I ever needed to come back, it'd be no problem.
So if Conor McGregor keeps calling you out, I don't know why he keeps doing it, Ricardo. Are you going to come back and fight Conor?
Absolutely, 100%. Let's do it.
Love it. All right, Jensen will be an octagon side for that one. Bully, get back to work, my friend. Thanks for joining us and taking some time to break down this main event fight. Fighter, obviously, you know very well. Always great to catch up, man, and keep holding it down in Chicago.
Thanks, guys. Take it easy.
There he is, Ricardo Lama. I told you, right? They call him the Bully, but he's a really nice guy when you're not inside of an octagon with him. But it looks like he could still make weight today if necessary. All right, we have much more to get to here. And again, we'll get to these other fights on this card as the week goes. We're going to have Reed Kuhn join us later on this week, Lou Finocchiaro as well. And Zayd Hussain is going to be coming in from Chicago as well. So we got a lot more to get to here on UFC 317 here, that main card, as good of a fight card as you're going to get. Come on back. Much more to get to here in our best bets on VSiN by the Books. By the Books, great conversation with the Bully, Ricardo Lamas, in the last segment as we get ready for UFC 317 this weekend. Charles Oliveira Yeah, it looked like Ricardo could still get back in that octagon if need be. I don't know why Conor always brings up his name, but maybe that fight at 145 never happened. Maybe we'll get it one day. We can get in the corner there, Jensen, for our guy Ricardo. Also, Derek Stevens, we've been talking about a lot this morning. I'm sure the guy's coming up here in a numbers game after us with Gil Alexander and Kelly Bidwin. Derek is making the media rounds behind us here today. He said upwards of about 24 satellite interviews. So Derek's got some coffee going and getting all the information out. Obviously, Circa Survivor, Circa Millions. So if you're in those contests and you need to start getting your signups going on here, no better time than the present out here in Las Vegas. And also, he made mention of this, Jensen. Derek and I had a brief conversation about home run props in Major League Baseball. And not a good day for Circa yesterday. Upwards of about 400K that they lost on these home run props. And that he says people are betting them like they bet UFC, which is they're going to do one-leg, two-leg, three-leg parlays on some of these home run props. So all of a sudden, it's weird. You know, NBA finals have come and gone. Stanley Cup finals have come and gone. We're all gearing up for football. And yet a lot of people in the betting market, Jensen, not only playing sides and totals here on a daily basis in Major League Baseball, but how about these home run props really starting to explode? And he mentioned Cal Raleigh. I mean, when you're on a run like the Big Dump is on right now, you know, the books are like, man, can this guy please go a day without hitting a home run? Because right now he's on fire.
Well, you are also getting some weather opportunities in some of these places. You know, you're thinking of Baltimore, where the ball, you know, flies. I mean, they changed the fencing there, too.
Right.
Cleveland Blue Jays are in Cleveland tonight. It's going to be super warm and humid here again. It's going to be in the low to mid 90s at game time. The Reds we talked about. I think I'm going to jump in on the over 9. I know it's up to 9.5 right now. For Rodon and Chase Burns down there. Hey, the Mets at Citi Field, you know, with those two lineups, and especially where the Braves are swinging it right now, you think of Chicago, Kansas City is always a haven. St. Louis hosting the Cubs right now. Of course, Colorado, yeah, anytime you're out there. So you also have this perfect storm of conditions in cities and where some of these, you know, offensive firepower are on display. So, yeah, man. Hey, we play Torpedo Bat Tuesday for a reason. Uh-huh. So some people. But here's also the rub on it, Dave. Can we see how many of these tickets people have put on the 3, 4, 5 leg, you know, home run parlays that don't get home? So, you know, anxious to see as we move forward here in the next couple of weeks as we get the dog days of summer.
Derek did make mention of somebody that put in about a $50 wager to win about 80K on the home run props. So, yeah, they're out there. Whoa. People are betting this stuff here. The dog days of summer, they're looking at those long balls. And by the way, remember we did that story about the high seams? They're like,
yes.
Maybe they're not high enough right now. They're starting to launch again. Maybe that humidity, as you mentioned here, and the heat in these ballparks, starting to get a lot of these balls to fly out of the yard. Let's get to our best bets, brought to us by GBank, the official bank of VEASAN. Let's stay in Major League Baseball here for what you already have for those VEASAN Pro subscribers out there. And the Jays, to get back in the good foot, remember, they're what, about 3.5 back right now, the Yankees, but they're also a game and a half back against the Rays. You like them today against the Guardians?
I do. I took the Jays earlier. VSiN Pro subscribers already getting the better of the number here. Got them at $1.15 on the money line at DraftKings. Already up to $1.26 there. $1.20 at Circa. Eric Lauer against Logan Allen. Just the way the right-handed bats for Toronto, Dave, have crushed some left-handed pitching. Not a good matchup. And mentioned the weather conditions already. Ball's going to be flying here with the heat and humidity in downtown Cleveland. And then you put Logan Allen, not going to generate a ton of swing and miss here from the left side. Do think the Blue Jays get the better of it. Also not mad if you want to play the run line there. That's at plus $1.34 at DraftKings, plus $1.30 there at Circa. So I do think the Blue Jays get it done tonight and potentially by multiple runs.
All right, those Phillies right now taking on the Stros in H-Town. And I think the Phillies, you know, maybe a little panic was setting in there a couple weeks ago. Now, all of a sudden, kind of reasserting themselves here in the NL East. Do they keep these good vibes going here in H-Town taking on the Stros?
I think they at least keep it close. Ranger Suarez, Framber Valdez, two good left-handers on the bump tonight. So runs could be at a premium, total at 7.5. and juice to the under, and not a surprise there. I did an alternate line here for the Phillies, Dave. I did a plus one on the run line for Philadelphia at plus $1.25. And right now, you see, if you want the full run and a half, that's $1.70 at Circa. That's a better price than at DraftKings right now. Just the way the Phillies have been able to hit with runners in scoring position, again, Framber Valdez, as good a breaking ball as you've got from the left side from a starting pitcher. This is one of those potential World Series matchups, the way that both teams have played. But I do think in this particular one, Phillies to keep it close, if not win outright.
You know, these are two teams that I think, from my perspective, that I don't fully trust long term, right? And we keep talking about, we talked about with CJ Nikowski as well, trade deadline, acquisitions. Do you look at the Phillies and Stros and go, because of where they are, maybe that's a surprise that they're both in first place at this juncture, that they do look for reinforcements coming to fortify their positions?
I think that the Phillies in particular will be in the market for at least a bullpen arm. Knowing that Alvarado can come back and help them get to the playoffs is just ineligible for the postseason. You're going to want as many dominant back end swing and miss arms as you can. Offensively, yeah, you're always looking for complementary pieces, but I would say that the Astros probably more likely to look in that area than the Phillies. And to be fair, when you look at where Houston's offense is right now, I told you yesterday, and it bears repeating, you're 4.5 games ahead of the Mariners. You're third in team average, but pretty middle of the road in runs scored and home runs. And that's not a surprise, losing, you know, Kyle Tucker, Alex Bregman, and not really having Yordan Alvarez for the majority of the season. If they get Yordan back here soon, that's going to feel like a deadline acquisition, just knowing what he can do in the middle of the lineup there with Paredes, with Altuve, Yiner Diaz. You know, Christian Walker is starting to swing it better. Cam Smith has been really good. Their young rookie phenom there in right field. And Jeremy Pena has been a revelation atop the lineup, getting that lineup started. So a little role reversal, Dave. We're used to seeing Altuve at the top of this lineup in many years past, but now being tasked with being a run producer in that three spot, while Yordan Alvarez is on the mat.
If Derek Stevens, I hope he's doing an interview and not listening, just to kind of recap Torpedo Bat Tuesday for some guys that might be able to get some total bases, if not go yard today. I love the Don't Overthink It segment that we did early in the program. Guys that have just owned other guys on the bump today, maybe looking at Brandon Nimmo, Alec Burleson, and Rafael Devers as plays today, Jensen?
Yeah, absolutely. And Max Muncy, 4 career home runs against Herman Marquez. If you're looking for the long ball angle there, is 2 or more total bases at $1.20 on DraftKings. We mentioned Ronald Acuña Jr. with CJ Nikowski earlier in the hour, leading the National League in OPS in the last 15 days, added to that last night. 2 or more total bases for him against Frankie Montas tonight, minus $1.35. Very advantageous positions here for multiple bases from a lot of these hitters.
Acuña, if you go yard today, just run around the bases. All right. We don't need the stop, drop, and pop every 10 seconds around the bases. All right. You've got a couple WNBA plays and a couple totals that you're attacking today.
Buddy, we said this, when we visit with Kate Constable, we'll bring it up again. But when you look at some early total numbers that get released and also be mindful of some of the injury reports, it pays to be a VSiN Pro subscriber. Yet again, another example, gave out the Lynx and the Mystics yesterday under 160.5. Dave, that is now all the way down to 157. So nearly, let me update you. It's down to 156.5. So you have 4 whole points. At least it's on DraftKings down to 156.5. It's at 158 there, as you can see on Circa. 4 total points already of some line movement. So we're feeling good about where that under is. Let's hope it gets home. And also, conversely, like a Sparks and Sky over 167.5. It's at 167 right now on DraftKings. 167.5, still the number there at Circa if you want to grab it. Do think the offense gets out in a big way for both sides tonight. So, again, If you're not a VSiN Pro subscriber, another great example of why you want it for the early plays.
Getting the best of the number, Jensen. That's half the battle, and then we need those teams to do their business after we've done our work here. Introducing the $500 trifecta from GBank First Bet and VSiN. All you got to do is open up a GBank Visa Signature credit card. When you do in the first 90 days, deposit, play through $1,000 at First Bet to trigger that $500 trifecta. You're going to get $200 in cashback rewards on your GBank Visa Signature credit card. First Bet's going to give you a $100 deposit match. Visa will complete the trifecta with a free Visa Pro subscription through October 31st. That in and of itself is a $200 value. That's the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and Visa. Head over to VSiN.com/GBank. That's VSIN.com/GBank. One-time promotion. This offer will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. Terms and conditions do apply. A numbers game is up next.